Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about the novel The Lost Fleet Dauntless.
By Jack Campbell?
That sounds correct. I thought we might want to read this because I had read The Lost Fleet Corsair, which was the five-issue series by Titan Comics, which I believe was also written by Jack Campbell. Although, it's one of those things, whenever you've got somebody with a pen name, you can always go to the copyright thing. Kind of find out who they are writing as or what have you.
Yeah.
Anyways, I had enjoyed the comic series and I was curious about this because the basic thing there, high concept, I'm going to say it's a little bit of a mishmash of, say, Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
In this case, you've got a fleet of ships. And in this novel, because the comic had different characters, I think, that were playing lead roles. In this, you've got Captain John Gary, now known as Blackjack Gary, like 100 years after his supposed death.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in some major battle and stayed on the ship. And
he was the captain going down with the ship, effectively.
Yes.
He was the commander in charge of the ship. He was not the rank of captain.
Yes, because he got that after his apparent death. But after he'd done everything he could on the ship, and the ship was of no use, he hopped in the last escape pod and got out of there.
Well, and I mean, he set the core to explode. It was the escape pod can't escape beyond the explosion zone, and I know that, but basically he chose to die in the escape pod instead of on the bridge on the off chance.
A slim chance is better than no chance.
Yes. Yes. And that, really, a slim chance is better than no chance, seemed to be his entire attitude for that battle for which he was famous.
Yeah. And it's interesting because if I had to point to a well-known sort of similar situation, I would say Kirk's father in the reboot of Star Trek, the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Do what you can, save the others, and go down with the ship.
Yeah.
Alas, he gets into the escape pod, goes into a cryo sleep, and is found 100 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a fairly good reason as to why he hadn't been found, etc.
Yeah.
How he'd been out there much longer, he'd have died. But they started after his revival, and to me it was, using a comic book analog, a kind of the Captain America after he's been thawed out from the ice.
Yes.
Man out of time, where is his place, what is his purpose, everything he knows is gone.
Yeah. Definitely.
And he gets thrust into command of this fleet that had just suffered a horrific defeat.
Well, and he's put in that role for, among other reasons, the fact that the Admiral knows, here's someone who understands our core values in a way that anyone else I chose doesn't. Because he was among those that we look back on.
He was a legendary hero from a century ago versus the modern, you know, more politic type captains.
He was among those who created our core values as opposed to those trying to live up to or trying to recreate the core values.
It'd be the equivalent of, would you pick a modern congressman or would you pick one of the founding fathers had they come back?
Yeah.
Even if they're woefully out of date, technology-wise or whatever, they have the mythology and the spirit behind what you want.
Yes.
It's funny because there's also a similarity between the original reboot Trek when Pike is leaving Kirk in charge.
Yes.
And kind of a him?
Yeah.
You know, sort of a thing. What I liked about this is there was a lot of fleet battle, not starship battle.
Yes.
It's okay, move this group of ships here, this one's slow, you gotta do this, whatever. Which is kind of what gives me a little bit of the Galactica vibe.
And very much a leave no man behind.
Oh, very clearly at one point.
Yeah.
But you've got somebody who everybody thinks is kind of the legendary Captain Kirk, But he wasn't at that point in his career and doesn't think he is.
Yes.
But is having to rise to the occasion.
Yes. Well, and at one point he has more than one interesting conversation with the person who it turns out is his grandnephew. And his grandnephew is saying, I've always had to live up to your legend. And now I get to see you fail to live up to the hype that has always been your reputation, your legend, whatever you wish to phrase it as.
I fully expect to see that grandnephew again. I don't think he died in the battle.
I hope to see the grandnephew again. I hope to see the grandniece that was mentioned.
I think we will, because I thought in the end of the comic series, there was a couple of pages of here are all the novels that this spins out of. And Titan's done some great stuff by taking some novels and letting the authors run with comics on them. Rivers of London's another example.
Well, they created a very interesting universe here. One of the things that intrigued me about the title, The Lost Fleet, is even that can be taken in more than one way.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the fleet is seemingly lost because they're trying to get home. But is this the fleet that lost?
Yeah. Is it the losing fleet, or is it the misplaced fleet?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the captain he winds up dealing with a lot, because the ship he's on, I liked.
Yes.
There were a couple of other captains of other ships. Some stay captains, some don't.
Yeah.
But I like that kind of politics or whatever. It wasn't overplayed, it wasn't too much, and it made sense.
I loved the, there's a regulation for everything, you just have to look for it.
Mm-hmm. There's a let the system save you aspect.
Yeah.
And there was some fun stuff of what he was trying was basically to teach new dogs old tricks.
Yeah.
Of these are things that have fallen out of fashion or out of use over the last century, but still work if you've got somebody who can call the play.
Well, it's a way of thinking that's all too easy to believe, because how many people do we know that simply go to the grocery store? But if there were no more grocery stores, if there were no more major farms providing food to the grocery stores, and suddenly everyone had to grow their own food, could they do it? There's so much basic knowledge, so much knowledge from 100 years ago that every household had, that 100 years ago was taken for granted knowledge, that has fallen by the wayside.
Well, imagine if every chess master gone.
Yeah.
You still have the game of chess, but now you're playing at a much more rudimentary level.
Yeah.
Until you can get people that can learn back up. And if you play chess with the loser dies, or even the winner dies, you know, because you're in war here, and you've got people that are rising through the ranks fairly quickly, because the ships just aren't lasting, the crews just aren't lasting.
Well, and at one point they point out, basically, we're no longer able to keep a ship in service long enough to retire the ship out of service.
Yeah. They're getting replaced after a short lifespan because this is a war that's chewing through a lot of ships.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Which is why he's seeing kind of younger and younger captains for the most part. And those that are older are ones that have managed to stay out of harm's way.
Well, and he's intrigued by their interpretation of his actions 100 years ago.
The number of times of what Blackjack Gary would have done.
Yes.
Gets used to his horror at times.
Yes.
Of how they took one instance and created this whole mythology around it. It's like, it's not one size fits all.
Yes.
It was a fun riff on, again, kind of, what if Kirk wasn't Kirk?
Yes.
To use a Star Trek reference. Without overplaying it. He wasn't this great wizard or military genius.
But he also wasn't inept.
No, he was competent. He knew when to question himself and when not to.
He knew how to surround himself with people who, to use the all too often used phrase right now, would speak truth to power.
Yes.
And he listened.
Well, and encouraged them to question him.
Yeah.
He encouraged some to question him, and others he just got the hell out of the way. And it came down to, did he respect them or not?
A combination of that and the tone with which they questioned and the types of questions.
I think the captain of the Dauntless could have asked him just about anything, questioned him on just about anything, and gotten a good reply. Because she wasn't challenging his authority. She was not understanding his motives.
Going back to tone of question.
Yes. Whereas there were one or two other people on the other ships that didn't do what they were told, put others at risk. In some cases, other lives were lost. Some, best of intentions, it just didn't play out. They came out okay. Others were rebellious, glory-hungry people, and they got out of the way pretty quick.
Well, and they talked about how kind of the theory of battle had changed. And, you know, in his time, you went by the formations, and there was almost a, we're talking Civil War thinking.
I was going to say Civil Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
They'd meet on the battle, they'd pause for a nice lunch, they'd go back.
Yeah.
They'd have formations. This is just how war is fought. There are rules.
Yes.
Versus compare that to the other kind of movie sort of battle, where you have the two mobs running at each other from the different sides, and it's just chaos.
Yeah.
Which is what it had devolved into.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't that they were glory hungry per se, but they all wanted to get their strike in. And there was an aspect of they thought that was what he had done 100 years ago. They thought he had been determined to close on the enemy, to take out every enemy you could.
It goes back to a Next Gen comment that Picard had made about the Wild West days of Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
Which comparatively it was, but then you look at Kirk and Spock and how they were out thinking and doing a more cerebral game than they got credit for at times.
Yeah.
And the same sort of thing here. Over years, it was kind of, well, we don't have to treat the prisoners quite as well. You treat them a little less, till you're almost just offing them because they're there and they're in the way.
Well, and as they pointed out, we don't have the quarters to put them in. We don't want to spend the money on the food. It was easy to rationalize away the expense.
Well, but in addition to that, there was the slow deterioration of everything to where saluting was highly unusual.
Yes.
It's the, let's have a meeting, let's all question it, we'll come back in a couple of days and figure out what we want to do.
Well, and the captains of all the ships in the fleet voting on whether or not they would follow what the Admiral proposed.
Yeah, the chain of command isn't what it was.
Yeah.
And he was having to take these people that were used to how they were doing it, thinking they were doing it his way, to actually having to do it his way, which is not what they were expecting or wanting. And he was exerting a bit more control over them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I really liked was at the end of one of the meetings when one of the captains pointed out to him, you put us in our place by telling us you have shamed your ancestors, etc. But by using the pronouns, we don't do it this way.
Yeah.
This is not our way. You grouped yourself with us.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't setting himself above the rank and file.
Yeah.
And the number of times he was going out and walking the ship to go interact with the crew, to feign interest in food, having 3 meals over the course of a break so he'd be out being seen.
Yeah.
And getting both the feel of the common person on the ship or whatever.
Well, and understanding that all of these people had a home to get back to. And being self-aware enough to know he didn't have a home to get back to.
Well, he knew not only did the people in his fleet, but the people on the opposing side.
Yes.
So he was treating them fairly humanely.
He also realized, and this was a point he seemed to have a very hard time getting across to the people in his own fleet, he knew that all of their actions would spread among the worlds the other fleet interacted with and controlled.
He was playing a bit of a PR game.
Yes.
Without it being a blatant one. He knew it was karma.
Yeah.
Treat the other side well, they may treat you well later.
Yeah. Well, and he wanted the reputation of, we don't randomly kill civilians who help us.
Yeah.
And things like that. So that when the time comes in some future book, where some planet has the choice to say, well, we've always been controlled by the syndicate because, you know, they keep nukes in orbit over us to destroy us if we don't. But here comes Gary and his lost fleet, and we could help them. Well, okay, we've heard all these rumors. they treat people better, maybe this is a chance worth taking.
If you come across a group that's going to treat you the way they think you would treat them,
yeah,
you're better off treating people well.
Yeah.
And not that he's averse to mowing down other ships, but he doesn't take joy in it either.
Yes.
He was a fascinating character.
Yes.
And I felt a lot, there were a lot of other characters that came up, and most of them, while we only saw them briefly at times, felt well-rounded enough.
Yeah, but he was a strong moral compass, both for himself and, as a result, for the rest of the fleet.
Yeah. Now, there was one character that was, I would say, one of the handful of lead characters. There was, of course, Gary. There was the captain of the Dauntless.
Disjani.
Disjani. But there was also the co-president.
Rion.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I fell into kind of hearing the voice and seeing the actress who played Agent Christopher on Timeless.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I can see that. I came out with the feeling very early on that she might not be human, for all that she's acting human.
I didn't get that at all.
Interesting.
I felt she was human, but she was a civilian, a politician.
Yeah.
Not a soldier, a warrior. I don't know what she was doing with the fleet to begin with.
Well, she has control of those two other groups that aren't technically in the fleet, and she was basically there to oversee that her ships weren't misused, and she could pull them out at a moment's notice.
It just seemed like, as co-president, I mean, would you be out on the front lines?
I got the impression that she was there to armchair quarterback the Admiral and keep him honest.
Yeah, yeah.
And going back to the, she seemed to know all along that the key was on the Dauntless.
Well, and it certainly explained her moving over to the Dauntless.
Mm-hmm. She was keeping the Admiral honest, and she seemed...
But she moved over to the Dauntless after the Admiral had been killed and Gary took over.
Yeah.
So either she felt he needed to be kept a close eye on...
She didn't trust Gary from the start.
And or her odds of survival were better on that ship.
No, I
because he's on it and because the key was on it.
She wanted to be with the key. I think she hadn't been able to finagle her way on under the Admiral.
Could be. Could be.
And she didn't trust Gary because all she knew of him was the legend. And she said from the start she didn't trust heroes.
She reminded me of the president on Galactica.
Hmm.
Somebody who was a little out of their depth in a military ship, but able to offer sage advice to the person in charge of the fleet. Obviously, the relationships and the details between Galactica and this are different. But she was well used.
Yeah.
She challenged him when he needed challenging and supported when he needed support.
Yeah.
I think that they set the seeds here of all known life is human, but there may be the possibility of unknown non-human life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
It has me wanting to reread the comic.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
One, to remember who the lead characters were there compared to this.
Yeah.
Because it was not Blackjack Gary. I don't remember if it was this captain of the Dauntless or if it was somebody else. And just getting a sense of that. And also where it fits in the timeline of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll be honest, I had said, let's pick this up because it wasn't that expensive and I was curious.
The ebook, we were given copies of the paperback at Comic-Con. True. Which is how I first became aware of it.
But, like, the ebook was, what, $2 or something?
Yeah.
So, not a big gamble or whatever. But I'll admit, I was a little wondering, is it going to be an easy read? Is it going to be a bit of a slog? Is it going to be of interest?
Yeah.
You know, because there are, anyone can write a book these days.
Yes.
And this is somebody who's written now, after this, like, 12 books at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it. This was a fun read. It moved well. It balanced the character moments, the political moments, had just enough of the tech of how the different weapons conceptually work or whatever.
Well, and the internal thoughts were entertaining.
Yes.
There are times when I get a little tired of, okay, do it in conversation, or why are we in their head so much? But this was funny.
Well, it was funny and it was good when he was kind of course correcting what he was saying.
Yes.
It's like, oops, I just said they were using bag tactics. Let's switch this to, with effective tactics, you can do this.
Yes.
You know, and kind of how he's got to finagle the crew and the fleet he's working with.
Well, he was very aware that sailors need the positive reinforcement. and that he didn't want to undermine their morale, their confidence in any way, but he could see drastic room for improvement from where they were versus where the sailors he worked with 100 years
where they were, where they needed to be.
Yeah.
Well, and also when the guy on the one of the support ships called him up and said, hey, you know, we could go do this.
Yes.
And he's like, why isn't that coming through chain of command?
Yeah.
And the guy kind of gave and not gave an answer.
Yes.
And then he went through the chain of command and the guy's like, oh, I'm too busy.
Yes.
You know, and when he came back to the guy, it's like, you did good, but don't make it a habit of skipping over command.
Yeah.
And he had restructured the command to where there was a better person to go through.
Yes. Well, and then when he went to the meeting of all the captains and said how command had been restructured, and somebody kind of nailed him on, well, is that captain going to say he agreed to this?
It was but he's probably going to be too busy to tell you.
Yes.
And a few chuckles went out. This is something I would like to see as a TV show.
Yes.
Because I think it lends itself to that pacing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that this book would be a full season or something.
No, but I think you could spend time on the various ships, and I think that's the advantage of the fleet.
I'm curious about the other books and how much they spend on the other ships and where it is timeline-wise.
Yes.
But I think you could take certainly this book and probably the rest and come up with a fairly rich narrative universe there.
Yeah.
And just even things like how they do the meetings with a virtual conference room. Yeah. Sounded interesting.
Well, I'm curious how long it'll take us to get back to Alliance space. I thought that his plan to not go the obvious and direct route was a good one.
Yes. Well, and to not go the completely not obvious route.
Yes.
You know, and he was very upfront of, we're taking some risks here. If we do this, they've got, what do they call it? The Hypernet system. Where they could just bounce exactly where they need to go. You've got to have the key. They've got a key. That's how the fleet was lured into an ambush, essentially.
Yes.
So let's avoid those places. They can get reinforcements really fast.
Yeah.
But let's also not go in a straight line back. They're expecting that.
Yeah.
And his rationale was explained well and at appropriate times.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they did a good job of pointing out that from the opening sequence, we were shown the enemy knows how the people they believe to be in charge of the fleet think.
Yes.
That's how they lured them into the trap in the first place. But they're not expecting either the legendary Blackjack Garry or Captain John Garry, whichever persona you go with.
Well, and there were one or two times he was recognized as the legendary. And, he's dead. What do you hope to gain by fooling me into thinking?
Yes, yes.
And there were other moments where he was basically doing the Captain James T. Kirk equivalent.
Yes, yes.
And it's funny because it's a riff on the Kobayashi Maru, not so much from the movies, but from the book of Star Trek, where it was explained that Kirk got through by basically, after failing it a few times, because you could take it as often as you wanted.
Yeah.
Kirk doesn't believe in the no-win situation. He, and this is spoilers for that, but oh well, rigged it to where when he got to where the Klingons were attacking, he announced, I'm Captain James T. Kirk, and they're like, the Captain James T. Kirk? It's like, yeah. And they kind of, you know, whoa, well, in that case, all that, you know, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was given a hard time of, you know, well, you think that's really going to work out in the field, that they're going to be so in awe of you. And his attitude was kind of, and I forget exactly how it played out, but kind of sort of, well, let's give it time.
Yeah.
And it showed the attitude of Kirk.
Yes.
The confidence of Kirk.
Well,
and this guy was playing, when he was announcing, you know, I am so-and-so, tell everyone I did this, and we'll do it again if we need to. You're facing my fleet now. He was playing into the legend.
He was using the legend even as we were getting his thoughts of, I'm not comfortable being the boogeyman in children's nightmares.
But being that he is, he's not afraid to use it either.
Yes. If it protects my fleet, I will use it to get these people home.
Yeah.
And the few times it came up of, what are you going to do once you get the fleet home? He had no answer.
His basic line is, I'm going to hand it over to whoever will take it and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the job.
Well, but he recognizes he has nowhere to go. And being the legendary Blackjack, he's not sure where he can go.
Yeah, he was afraid of going home to see the statue that was no doubt erected in his honor. And
yeah, so yeah. They've created an interesting situation for him. He respects his duty. He's honor-bound. He's a fabulous character in those respects. But once he's fulfilled his promises, what he'll do next is equally interesting.
What I like about him, it's hard not to draw parallels between him and Kirk.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of places where the two are very similar, but others where they're completely opposite.
Yes.
Kirk's a little bit more ego.
Yes.
This guy is not. And Kirk is building that reputation, whereas this guy has inherited his own reputation.
Yeah.
And I like those aspects of this character. He stands on his own. If you've never read or watched Star Trek, I think you'll still enjoy this.
This is the leader you want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that starting a series with this book, with this character, was a great decision by the author.
Yeah, I was a little surprised where it started, that he'd just been found and was getting thrown into command or whatever. But, I mean, this book could have taken a very different direction if you'd had the exact same setup, but you had an incompetent Gary.
Yes.
Versus a competent one.
Yes. Well, and it took me a while to kind of get the hang of what they were doing with the I feel cold. And just kind of the, he was having emotional problems kind of adjusting to the, I came out of the survival hibernation and faced the shock of everyone I ever knew is dead. And their children are dead, for that matter.
Well, and his brother's great-grandson is decades older than he is, and he may have just killed him.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah.
There was a, I just want to go back to sleep aspect of the character, but I can't.
Yeah. He was having to figure out how to connect with these people, with this universe he woke up in, with these people wearing uniforms that should have been familiar and made him feel at home, but didn't.
If they were to do this as a TV show or a movie or whatever, casting this guy, you'd have to find the right mix.
Yes.
Somebody who can do the Kirkish speeches of kind of the I am Blackjack, whether I believe it or not.
Yeah.
But can also do the doubting, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
And can, you know, somebody who you can see kind of the wheels turning behind the eyes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I don't know who that would be, but finding somebody who can be compassionate, yet can also be that ice cold when he needs to be.
Yeah. Well, and someone who can create the illusion they're physically strong when other people are in the room, but when they leave, can do kind of that physical collapse of, you know, my muscles haven't been used in 100 years.
Yeah, yeah. The strong but atrophied duality there.
Yeah.
I think they played well with that. I liked how this had a veneer of sci-fi.
Yeah.
But really when you get into it, the most sci-fi aspect was the time-late aspect.
Yes.
Of light speed limits when you know things.
Yeah.
Making it almost a submarine warfare kind of a game. Versus anything. If you gotta wait for the radar to sweep around.
Yeah.
It didn't have the preponderance of tech widgets that Trek has.
Or Babel.
Or Babylon 5 or...
Oh, I was gonna say Techno Babel.
Oh, Techno Babel, okay. But even Babylon 5 had a lot of gizmos here and there and such.
Mm-hmm.
Some they'd use once and never again, the privacy field or whatever. So, it wasn't kind of trying to push hard sci-fi, you know, let's expand this knowledge and extrapolate what it could be or whatever. Even things like the hypernet and shields, it's like, we have them.
Yeah.
They do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trying to explain the science behind them or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably the closest it got to that was the null field thing, where it would just kind of discorporate the bonds between atoms and dust everything. And they did a good job of Gary seeming kind of intellectually impressed and equally horrified.
Yes. Yes. Well, and his recognition when he talked to the guys who manned that department of gunners love their guns.
Yep.
So, recognizing it's not that these guys are gung-ho to go murder people, it's that gunners love their guns.
It's their job, and they're good at it.
Yes.
Respect that.
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed a lot of those aspects, and it was a fun read. It was a quick read. I mean, I'm not going to say I blasted through the thing. It took... Actually, I'm not even sure how long I took to read the thing. The Kindle may tell me at some point. I'm not sure how. But it read... It was... I'm not going to say it was the fastest page turner I've ever read. I've read some others that were just quicker reads. But it read effortlessly, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And it was very enjoyable. It never got to where it's like, geez, move on.
Mm-hmm.
Or going so fast, I wish they'd stayed here a little longer kind of a thing.
Well, and they covered the time surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of we were in jump time for a couple weeks, but you felt the passage of time without saying, okay, you've belabored it.
Well, and that's why I think a TV show would work for this, because I think it'd be interesting for them to have a bit more of an action episode and then spend the next episode in jump space or whatever.
Yeah.
They're dealing with stuff. He's, more of a... there was a comic called The Sword by the Luna Brothers. And there'd be one issue that was pretty plot-heavy, another that was pretty action-heavy, plot-heavy action,
Yeah.
But it got into... You would feel it could come across uneven, but it got into a good cadence.
Yeah.
It's like, you need to move the plot forward. You can't really do that with a heavy action, but we need heavy action, And you got into the rhythm of it, or at least I did.
Yeah.
And here, there were times where a lot was going to happen, a lot would happen, and then there were times it's like, okay... We're going to blast through a couple of weeks of training or jump space or whatever and not feeling like they've glossed over the important stuff.
Yeah.
Because there were even some times in jump space we spent a little more time there. Oh, communications is more like texting at this point.
Yes.
Okay, let's learn the ramifications. So I would almost be tempted to start a TV series with this, literally with them opening the escape pod.
Yeah.
If this were a movie, I would kind of, that would be the opening credits or whatever kind of a thing, and then he's in his cabin of, okay, what's going on, having gotten just enough of everything before to get a sense of who he is, who he was.
Yeah.
But it's one that I think they've got enough character moments between the different people in the fleet and stuff like that, that you couldn't really do it justice in a movie.
I agree.
You need to have a little bit more time for some of these characters to get on the scene, get annoying, get played out, or, or save the day or what have you.
Yeah.
So it'd be a good opportunity for a lot of character actors as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So this was a lot of fun. I'm thinking we'll definitely read some more of the books.
Yes.
And like I said, I need to kind of reread the comic and refresh my memory on that.
Makes sense.
So anything else? Are we good?
I think that's all.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.